My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
We need you now. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. Give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
It's Evergrande giving us a global real estate reality check. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. A very good morning to you. Happy Friday. The Chinese property giant Evergrande has filed for bankruptcy protection in the US. This move basically lets Evergrande, which is swimming in debt, safeguard its assets in the US while it's looking to strike a mega $1 billion deal with its creditors. And it comes at a point when there are some serious worries about the world's second largest economy. Here's the BBC's Nick Marsh in Singapore.
Evergrande is the best known of several floundering Chinese property developers. 2 years ago, it defaulted on some of its $300 billion worth of debt. Since then, it's made a loss of a further $80 billion. Millions of people across China currently have their money tied up in unfinished property. In fact, a quarter of China's economic activity is accounted for by real estate. The industry saw rampant speculation until a couple of years ago, but then the money dried up after the government put limits on how much companies could borrow.
That was Nick Marsh reporting. Now let's do the numbers. This might not be surprising given the news, but Asian stocks are down. Hong Kong's Hang Seng is down 2%. China's CSI 300 is down 1.2%. And Japan's TOPIX down 0.7%. Now, if you've been listening this week, and I hope you have, you might have noticed a bit of a tourism theme. Today we're going to look at Croatia, where tourism is the country's largest industry. And its long stretch of Adriatic coastline attracts visitors from all over the world. And increasingly, tourists are being served by workers who've travelled thousands of miles themselves as businesses turn to Asia to solve staff shortages. Our Balkans correspondent Guy Delany hit the seaside to find out more.
The summer season is getting into full swing here on Croatia's Kvarner coastline. There's just one problem, though. With all these new arrivals coming in, there simply aren't enough staff to take care of them.
Whole Croatia is understaffed for the last 2 years.
Nino Kajfes Svijetic runs an employment agency called CP Recruitment. He specialises in matching Croatian employers in need with workers from Asia who can do the job.
Asian people, when they come, they have a triple or four times bigger salary than in their countries, you know, so it's very good for them.
It's preparation time here in the kitchen of Tarša, a restaurant in Rijeka, Croatia's third city. The workers in here aren't actually from around this area. In fact, they're not from this country or this continent at all.
My name is Chirindur Sepa. I'm from Nepal. In Croatia, we can do the same work and earn much better salary.
Hello, my name is Asa Puria. I'm from Nepal. There is lots of people in Croatian people. It's very nice. My workers, they are very friendly. And others, my bosses, they are very pretty good. Very nice, my boss. So it's nice to work here.
The admiration is mutual. The worker shortage means the business owners are grateful for any help they can get. With the tourism wave still on the rise, the demand for workers is only likely to increase. And as the recruitment agent Nino told me, for Croatia, Asia is the future. In Croatia, I'm the BBC's Guy Delaunay for Marketplace.
So England's women's soccer team have the chance to make history when the final of the Women's World Cup kicks off on Sunday morning. England won a place in the final over host team Australia, and that feel-good factor has translated into an economic boost across the UK, with fans celebrating in pubs and bars.
Everybody, young girls, like everybody that you want to encompass it all, you couldn't imagine. Everybody is so pleased. And they're just like, yes.
Now, fun fact, this Women's World Cup is the most watched in history, with a predicted global audience of more than 2 billion people. The BBC's Felicity Hannah has been speaking to Paul Watterson, chief executive of the Australian Venue Company, which owns over 200 pubs and bars all across Australia and New Zealand.
I think the Matildas has had an incredible ride, just weren't good enough. But gee, it's really captured the imagination over here, and the attendances at pubs are sort of 40 to 60% higher than we've seen at equivalent days. So it's been very special.
Is the clientele different for the Women's World Cup final? Is it more family orientated? Does that mean kind of less big groups of people drinking beer and more meals and families out?
That's exactly the point, Felicity. And it's a far more even gender than we would normally see in a lot of the venues as well. So we've had up to sort of 60-40 female-male split, whereas often it's the other way. And we're definitely seeing people bringing in their kids and having a meal and then watching a game. And to put it in perspective, there was 12 million Australians watched the game the other night of a total of 25 million population. So it's just got enormous interest.
And when it comes to sponsorship, Rebecca Derrick, Global Business Director at sports agency 50 Sports, says some brands might wish they had put their money into this event sooner.
We were getting last-minute sponsorships almost 4 weeks before the tournament. For a men's tournament, you'd be booking those years in advance. So I think there's going to be a few sheepish CMOs out there who wanted to be able to activate it a bit smarter and get a little bit more authentically involved. It's been a bit of a, we'll take what we can get. We just need the investment behind it. We want to pay our players fairly. We want to make sure that we're getting their brand out there. But we're seeing that their brand value is worth almost the same as the men's now.
That's it. CMOs, take note. That was Rebecca Derrick, Global Business Director at sports agency 50 Sport. And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Our producer today and all this week was Alex Bell. Our editor is Joe Critcher. And I'm Leanna Byrne. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.